Hello, and welcome to the Warlord Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mann. In this episode, we'll be discussing the original Warlord series from DC Comics. In this Warlord Spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to be discussing Warlord number 20 through 23. James, how you doing tonight?
Doing well. How are you doing, John?
I am doing pretty well. Now, this is going to go out pretty soon after number 5 goes out, I think, within a couple of weeks, but it's been a little while since we read those past couple of issues.
Yeah, that was quite a while ago in our recording timeline.
The magic of editing and release schedules. So, to refresh our memory, as I recall, Travis and Tara were out searching for their son Joshua because Demios had taken him at the tail end of, I think, issue 15.
Yes.
And then
that is correct.
In number 19, right before the stuff we're going to pick up with, Travis and Tara rejoined with Mariah and Machiste through one of their adventures. And then number 20 here picks up with them apparently having, you know, filled each other in on what had happened in the meanwhile.
Exactly. Remember, I'd forgotten that they had almost a whole army with them at this point, which was kind of cool.
Did they have a whole army, or was it the thugs or whatever that Machiste and stuff had? I don't remember.
Yeah, like a group of people. I'd forgotten about that big group that they had with them.
It certainly looks, just from the silhouette on that first panel, like a pretty sizable, start of a sizable army, at least.
Exactly. I remember it was a big group, but I don't know how big the group was. So.
Well, and as much as I'm loving this series, and I am loving this series, there were a couple of things as I was reading these four issues this time that kind of stood out in terms of there could have been better establishing shots.
Okay.
Because on this first page, we see Tara, we see Travis, we see Mariah. We don't see Machiste until, like, I don't know, page 7?
Yeah. He's, like, gone, and I was wondering what happened to him at that point.
And it's like, oh, we need him in the story. Poof, here he is.
Exactly. Yeah, so you got to almost assume he's the silhouette back there with those soldiers.
Yeah, I guess, but why isn't he riding up front with the rest? Or
you would think, yeah, that's a miss, for real.
Yeah, not a big miss, but yeah, it is a miss. Because there are one or two other things where it's like suddenly, oh, and this is here. And I'm like, that's convenient, but okay, I'll assume it was here all along. It's the kind of thing, if you were to turn this into a movie, TV show, or do an editing pass on this or whatever, all it would take, like in this first panel, show Machiste, show one or two other things, and poof, they're there.
Exactly. Yeah, I kind of got the vibe that he had a lot of free reign with the title. And although there may have been an editor assigned, it was, I don't know how much the editor was doing.
There was an editor. I think it was, yeah, it's Jack Harris, according
Jack
to
Harris.
Two-page splash. But I think they were smart enough to pretty much give Grell, you know, just go do what you're going to do, unless there was something egregious.
Exactly. Like, leaving Machiste out, it's probably not worth asking him to go back and redo the page. You know, you don't want to upset the guy.
Not even you don't want to upset the guy. It's like, would you have even noticed that in an editing pass?
Maybe not. Honestly, until you said it, I didn't notice it. I would be a horrible editor.
Well, it's easy to be a not great editor, I think, is the problem. Because it's hard to notice things that aren't there.
Yeah, very true. Until you mentioned it, I didn't think about it. And then when you needed Machiste, he was there. And so you just assume, like, your brain fills in the blanks.
Oh, exactly, exactly. And that's a natural part of comic storytelling, because we do that between panels. So it's not like they established that he wasn't there and then he is.
Exactly.
So, yeah. And again, it's a nitpick or whatever, not a big deal, but it was something I just kind of noticed of, wait a sec, I didn't see him before. Did I miss him? And I flip-flap back a few pages. Nope, not there. Whatever.
Yeah. This one was kind of like a cool issue, though, because the whole thing that they do with Joshua here and setting up this plot device that's going to reappear down the road and reappear again multiple times, I think, stuff that we haven't even seen yet.
Yeah, there are a couple of things with the whole plot line with Joshua and stuff that I don't want to say were telegraphed, but we're, I mean, and we're reading this at the tail end of 2023. This came out in what?
1970-something, I think.
April 1979 is what it's listed as.
Yeah.
So we're a much more educated audience than they were back then in various ways.
Exactly. So, I was 6 years old when this comic came out.
Well, but even people of our age at that time.
Exactly. They hadn't seen this stuff. We've read thousands upon thousands of comics where the readers here probably didn't.
Well, the minute we get the, let's take one of his cells of Joshua, and we get an exact duplicate down to the last hair on his head, a clone! You know, one, we wouldn't need an explanation of a clone, but always good to have it in there. And two, go take the clone in the tower and wait there, as he waves her off, the witch or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, I wonder if she switched kids.
I wonder, what's going on here?
And part of that is, I think, not only we're a more educated audience, we're certainly a more cynical audience. At least I am.
Exactly, because we've seen stuff before. We've seen it happen.
And they set up this Ashaya or whatever as being not only the person who's raising Joshua for Demios, but being fairly protective of him.
Yeah, she likes the baby, and that's a good thing. You know, someone who doesn't want to cause harm to a child, you would hope that would be most people.
Yeah, but given she was something of a...
witch?
A witch when we first saw her, literally, not figuratively a witch, but you know what I mean? She's a bad person, so her being protective is a little surprising.
Yeah, I would agree, because it's like a mothering, nurturing thing came out of her, and you wouldn't expect it from what we've seen.
Yeah, but they spend a couple of pages on the whole cloning sequence.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. At first, when I saw that thing come up, and I was like looking at the lightning bolts, I was like, what the heck is this? I'm like, is he trying to create a world map? And then, yeah, but then they spend literally two whole pages showing him creating the baby. And then actually a third page where he almost takes that crystal ball like thing and he's looking at the, I'm assuming it's the same globe that where the clone was created, where he's spying on the warlord and all of his comrades riding across the desert.
I don't think so, because if you go back to page 4, he's got the viewing globe kind of a thing where he's seeing Travis.
Yeah, different.
And then he's got another one that looks to be like a top and bottom that kind of meet, kind of almost like a Darth Vader chamber for babies.
Ah, good catch.
But I think there's a lot to be explored with the tech in Skartaris and stuff. And we get a reference to the Scrolls of Blood from one of the early issues.
Yeah, this is kind of cool. I like it. You get a lot of the swords and sorcery stuff because you get the tech stuff in here, but then you also get, as you know, you go along when you're looking at the raiding party, or I don't know what you want to call them. They're not really an army. The brigands, I don't know what they are.
Yeah. They don't stick around long enough for it to matter. So
yeah, they get wiped out at this issue. We just got them introduced recently, and boom, here you have these demons coming out, literally picking them off.
Yeah.
And except for the core group, they get away.
Well, I mean, Demios is picking them off with an earthquake. He then causes, people to get, I guess the crushing is from the earthquake, but then the demons and stuff. Yeah, within a page or two of them starting to get attacked, it's down to just the core four. And again, this is where Machiste kind of miraculously shows up.
Exactly. And when you get down to these four, they're kind of like separated a little bit. But it was really cool. I mean, I kind of expected it when he was walking. I was like, you see, and they're all staying back there. And of course, your eye can see over there to the right. But yeah, you're like, okay, that's not good that you're going in by yourself. You're not all walking together. Then boom.
Well, he specifically didn't want to because he figured it was a trap. So you guys stay back. I'll spring the trap.
Yeah, exactly. So you know something's going to happen. You know it.
It's Skartaris. Expect the unexpected is the motto. And I mean, the drawbridge collapse, he almost gets skewered by the portcullis or whatever, metal grate that has the cell bars or whatever that slams down. And, you know, and then we basically stop seeing Atar, Mariah, Machiste in this issue. We pick up again with them next issue. And then it's all down to just Travis and stuff.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And this issue, once you get with him separated from the group, Travis, he's going up these stairs into this tower and everything. It gave me flashbacks of Tower of the Elephant, which was a story that's really big in Conan.
Mm.
And so it just tells me that Grell's a big fan of Conan because it's not exact. It's not a duplicate or a copy, but you get that vibe. And it seems kind of adventuring. And you even have the magician at the top, you know, the magic at the top.
And we had an issue 7 or 8 back, I think, where they had the tower, you've got to go up, fight the obstacles in the way, that kind of a thing. So it's one of the tropes of this sort of thing.
Exactly. You see this over and over again, and it just brings me back to that. It's a classic tale of Conan. I'm like, this guy's a fan. Yeah. And it works well. It works really well.
Well, but not only is he adhering to the genre and stuff, and Conan being kind of one of the pinnacles and exemplifying aspects of it or whatever, but he's also adding some things with the gun, the tech, and stuff like that. But treating tech as just another form of magic in this world, effectively.
Exactly. Yeah. It's almost like you say, they treat it almost interchangeably, where magic is tech and tech is magic. And I kind of like that because a long time ago, I played a role-playing game where that was kind of like the premise behind it. Back when I was in high school.
Any technology that's sufficiently advanced is indistinguishable from magic. And the tech here fits that bill.
Yeah. So it's really cool. And I like when you finally get the showdown because he gets up there with Demios and the change that you had to Demios, as soon as the fight starts happening, I immediately, my mind jumped to this guy's a vampire type thing.
Essentially, yeah.
And then literally, yeah, it starts being fed to you. You're like, oh my gosh, yeah, that's exactly what he is.
Well, I was going to say the difference is, but I mean, Morgan impales him with a metal sword. If it had been a wooden one, do you think he would have gone poof like an actual vampire or no?
I think he would have. I think he went for total vampirism here because he's drinking a chalice of blood. He has the long nails and he made a comment about not being able to go out into the daylight and having to stay in the darkness. And I was like, oh my gosh, he created a vampire. How he turned into one, I don't know.
Well, it's the mask of life. That's
the mask of life, yeah.
So, I mean, the description totally fits a vampire. I just wonder if it fits it absolutely to where if he had done it with a spear, wooden spear or something. But, you know, when Demios basically, it's like, yeah, I'm fine. Mask of life's no problem. And pulls the sword out and tosses it back to Travis. It's like, damn.
Exactly. You're like, uh-oh, we're in for a real fight now.
Yeah. But then it's like, no, it wouldn't be fair for me to fight you. I'm immortal now. You'll fight my champion.
Joshua.
In comes Joshua.
Yeah.
I think it would have been funny for him to fight basically toddler Joshua, but can't have that. So we end this issue with Joshua getting artificially grown into an adult.
Yeah, that was kind of creepy. Thank God he had a little loincloth on.
It seemed to grow too.
Yeah, it grew longer as he did. Oh my gosh, it grew longer as he did. Oh, okay.
Now that,
sorry.
That mask of life is what Travis retrieved back, I think, in issue 10.
Yes, yeah, remember that because I remember seeing the mask of life. And how the Mask of Life turns you to a vampire, I don't know. I always thought you had to get bit by one. So we'll assume it's slightly different vampirism.
I guess the question is the Mask of Life magic or science?
That's what we don't know. And I would lean towards the side of magic myself.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But with this world, it could be either.
They play fast and loose with it, so who knows?
And they did all of this in, again, 17 pages. And that's counting two of them, which were the title page. Which, it looked awesome, didn't add anything to the story.
Yeah, I would agree. And I'll tell you what, something that I really appreciated, I hate to keep harping on this, but as we're recording this, I have read 2 months of comics in like the span of 2.5 weeks. And those snippets of comics that we get in current comics, it's so hard to piece together when you take them months off. And it's just so refreshing to read a story. And even though it's picking up after something, you can start without remembering anything or having read anything before, and you know exactly what's going on. It's so easy. We haven't read this in months, and you just fall right back into the flow.
Mm-hmm.
I miss the almost simple stories, and I know people are like, we like more complex stories.
Well, but
do we really?
Is this really a simpler story?
Not really.
We've got a lot going on here. I would argue more than most comics. We've got some sorcery going on, we've got some cloning going on, we had a couple of fights, we had some character moments here and there, and the number of story beats and stuff was not trivial.
Yeah, that's true. This, in a modern comic, would have had about 15 additional pages with the people just talking, around a campfire and droning on and talking about their feelings or whatever, just to fill pages.
Yeah.
And not progress the story at all.
I mean, there are a couple of these scenes that go on for a few pages here, but that's a little unusual for this title, I feel. I mean, the showdown with Travis and Demios goes from 14 through to the end of 17. I mean, it's 3-4 pages there, I guess, not that many. But that would have been it feels like it would have been its own issue in a modern comic, probably.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, this was just really refreshing after what I did. After reading the 2.5 months worth of comics, I was like, oh, this is nice to read this.
I think anyone who hasn't read comics from this era, you know, late 70s, early 80s and stuff, should do so. This, I think, is a good sampling, a good thing to pick, but there are others as well. And it's not that this is better storytelling or something like that, but it's a fundamentally different style of storytelling.
Oh, yeah.
That until you've really read it yourself, it's sometimes a little hard to describe because there are aspects of decompression in this story, yet it's a fairly compressed 17-page story. You know, it took a few pages to clone Joshua. Didn't need to.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, they could have done it in a frame or two, but I'm thankful that he didn't. And I think what you get here is a lost art. You get someone with a really creative mind who doles out a story and an adventure and a tale without, you know, just filling pages for a paycheck, which is what you feel like you get with a lot of comics today.
I think a lot of writers today are more entranced with the turn of the phrase, the wording, and that sort of dramatic moment versus the how many story beats are on the page, how much happens. Do you feel like you got enough story for the issue?
Yeah. It makes me realize why some people pull out of the hobby and almost focus. They're like, oh, I can go back and read my back issues from the 70s, 80s, maybe early 90s, because there's a wealth of material there, and it's written in, I think, a more respectful way to the reader than what we have today.
Yeah, I think there's great stuff in every decade, but it's sometimes great in very different ways, and sometimes there's a lot more great stuff in other decades than some.
I agree.
And what I consider great, other people may consider either too wordy or not substantial enough or, you know, whatever. But if you've only been reading modern comics, I do think you owe it to yourself to do some sampling of prior decades to see what works for you, what doesn't, and why.
Exactly, because it's a fun experience. I've been enjoying this. It's great.
Yeah.
And this is only the first issue, issue 20.
Well, let's move on to that next one because it follows right on the heels of this.
It really does.
It follows a little further back because it really was, what, page 10 or wherever when we stepped away from the other three and we pick up with them a little time later, presumably as much time happened as the rest of the issue, where they're like, oh, we've circled the fortress and we still can't get in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, this almost reminded me of the second season of Lost, where you get that first episode and the second episode kind of rewinds a little and moves forward again.
Exactly. You're seeing it from the other perspective, but back to where we started. Exactly. That's what he's doing here.
I don't know that we literally rewound, but it's still there. We're again, coming at it from their perspective. And it's one of those, oh, wait, we're getting attacked. When all else fails in a warlord story and the writer doesn't know what to do, somebody attacks.
There will be a fight scene shortly after. And I'll tell you what, it was kind of funny because that attack. At the next, you know, progression of the story where we go back to Joshua and Travis, I was wondering that thing, and I'm glad he put it in there. He's like, hey, you made his body big, but the kid's still a simpleton. It's still a baby's mind. He hasn't learned anything. And then, lo and behold, the solution to that is Demios touching his head. Boom. Basically imparting all his knowledge or something.
I couldn't quite tell what Demios was doing there.
That's what I was thinking. I thought it was almost like a transplant of memory, or I don't know.
Something.
That's what I took it as.
I agree. That's probably what it is. It was ambiguous.
Because the kid doesn't have any memories. It's a blank slate. He doesn't even know how to walk or hold a sword or anything. So he had to have something put into his brain to make him be able to function like a human being instead of an infant.
Yeah, to account for that growth beyond. Because at this point, he's literally still sucking his thumb.
Exactly. Like a baby. It was so funny. I was like, looking at him. He's like, he's a simpleton. What are we going to do? So it was just funny.
Yeah.
I like that.
It's funny. We start with the other three. We cut to the page or two with, you know, what's going on with Joshua and stuff. Now we cut back to the other three. Oh, they're in the midst of a fight. Oh, let's run away. You know, go find somewhere safe. Convenient crevice, convenient cave. Let's cause a cave-in. And then they pull out, Tara, I guess it is, pulls out the Hellfire Stones. I want to say from issue 17, where we had that parallel story with the wizard and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And she's got the two halves that'll light up. And boom. Shadow was here. Shadow's already found the way.
Exactly. And I was like, where did Shadow come from? I forgot about him.
He wasn't in the whole issue prior to this and should have been.
Exactly. So he was another character like Machiste missing. I guess he's been with him the whole time or something. I don't know what happened.
Had to be.
Yeah, he's been barking and running around. We just haven't seen him anywhere. But here he is because we need him.
I want to see somebody do a spoof of this kind of a story in a film where somebody has the power of narrative convenience. And it's like, Shadow will take care of it, and we, the audience, see nothing, and poof, Shadow is, you know, materializes whatever, and everybody's like, oh yeah, he's always been here.
Ah, Shadow, yeah. That would be hilarious.
And at this point, Mariah and Tara are just about to go at it because Tara's like, I don't know what relationship you've had with Travis, but he's mine. And it's like, okay. Fortunately, Machise's like, now's not the time.
Exactly. Let's not do this here. And he can only put his hand on one lady because the other one has a big spiky ball. So he's not, luckily not pushing Tara.
He is pushing Tara.
Or and Tara, I mean.
Mariah, that he's interested
Mariah.
In.
Yeah, Mariah. He's not pushing her.
He's no fool.
Exactly.
So, and then of course, let's cut back to Travis and stuff. And now he's got to fight his grown son that, you know, for all intents and purposes, may as well be Conan.
Exactly. It's like Conan with red hair. He's a big barbarian looking dude. And of course, Travis doesn't want to kill his son, even though it's a grown man, you know, he's still thinking this is my boy. So he's literally just dodging and taking the hits to his shield.
And we get the dialogue of the shield and the armor slowly getting stripped away.
Yep. It's getting chipped away and he gets wounded at the end, laying there.
Yeah. Nice splash page of Travis getting hit. And then he's down. It looks like Joshua's pausing before slaying him and stuff, but, and I couldn't tell, it almost looked like his eyes glowed red a little bit, like Demios had to kind of push him to make the striking blow or the killing blow.
Yeah, because he was saying, I'm your father, like he was thinking it over, and then he got almost like enthralled by Demios. But luckily...
Well, Travis still has the gun.
Pistol on the hip, boom! Shoots it, and it looks like it hit him right in the head. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I couldn't tell if it was a glancing blow or what, because we know Travis is a good shot, but it's literally shooting from the hip. The gun never left the holster.
That was awesome. I was... Because he has his, like, thigh up, so... And the way he was holding the face, that's why I took it, like, oh my gosh, he shot him in the head.
Yeah, yeah, I took it that way, too. And it seems to kill him.
Yeah, he's done. And Demios is, like, happy either way, because if his champion won, Travis is dead, and now you had to kill your own son, and he wins either way.
Yeah. And then I guess Demios whips up a dragon or something?
It was definitely, like, a dragon. It's kind of snake-like, but it's definitely a dragon.
Yeah.
A long-body dragon.
In come the other three, because the cave apparently led them deep into the fortress.
Yes. Dog did, too.
And it's like, oh, you've got the Hellfire Jewel, you know, we've got to save Travis, so put the pieces together, it, I guess, kills the dragon?
Yeah. And I did like Shadow's appearance with Demios in the fight.
Yeah. He basically goes, tackles him, and I couldn't tell if he pushed Demios over or went over with Demios. I think he just pushed him over.
That's what I'm hoping, because you couldn't tell. Like, you'd assume they went over, like the dog's going to bite them and they're going to tumble over, but you don't want Shadow to be gone, you know? But they don't really show Shadow.
Yeah, we don't see Shadow after that, but we didn't see Shadow until he was important before, so don't know.
We really don't know.
And then Travis has this brilliant idea of, yep, it's our son, don't worry. We've got the Mask of Life. We can restore him. And Tara's like, we're not turning this kid into a vampire. He doesn't say it exactly that way, but drinking blood, hiding in the light, rotting of the bones, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, basically a big vampire. So they leave their son behind and they're sad, but they're not that sad, I don't think.
Well, I read this a little differently.
Okay.
She smashes the mask, which she thought was going to save the son.
Yes.
As far as Tara's concerned, Joshua is dead. And Travis basically says, hey, I got to go somewhere and think. I can't stay here. And then we get the lines of Machiste, or no, it was Mariah, of, there was a time we would have followed you anywhere, but no longer. So Travis goes off, and those three don't.
Yeah, literally leaves the group. And so they are split up. And that was kind of surprising. I was like, wow, he's really, because he had a tear in his eye and everything, he just wants to be alone. He doesn't want to be saving the world, any of that. So...
Now, we see him on horseback going out. We get Demios' claw or whatever, a laughter implying, yeah, he's not really dead.
Exactly, yep.
And we get the half-page epilogue where Ashaya has dropped off, presumably, the real Joshua with some farmers with plenty of gold to raise him and give him a nice, simple, humble life.
Yeah, with his little pocket watch on his, or not his pocket watch, but his wristwatch.
The Rolex or whatever arm. It was from Travis's, yeah.
Yeah, on his arm, but... Yeah, so the son's still there, and he will appear again one day, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Demios will, too. I mean, I appreciate that both of these things were very clear at the end of, we're not done with these characters, we're just done with them for the moment.
Yeah, because that's not done today. They just give you and take away characters, and they just come up with a creative way to reinvent them in the future, and they don't give you any hint that it's going to happen.
All right, this would have been at least 2 issues of a modern comic. We'd have ditched the epilogue at the end entirely. One of the issues would have been the death of Joshua. They'd have pumped it as much as they could hype-wise and tried to make that a collector's item. And then they might have done the same with Demios. And then probably the story would have... I mean, they claim this is the end of the story, but really the next issue starts with Travis kind of having the epilogue-y thing of, I'm going drinking and leave me alone kind of a deal.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know? But they would have pumped it for the collectability aspects.
Exactly. I miss comics like this.
Yeah.
You get so much more with every issue.
Well, and when we get into the issue 22 here, it's another one where we start with Travis at a bar drinking and stuff. And it's like, we've seen one or two, sometimes just in the background of this. But and we get the old guy. It's like, I'll read your poem and tell you your future. And he's like, don't bother.
Yeah.
Death, destruction, happiness lost, love lost, dream lost. Ah. He's like, oh, but there's destiny. Off goes the old man. For now, we see him later.
Exactly.
And then it's like, oh, Travis is about to get mugged.
Exactly. And that does not go well for the guys doing the mugging, I would
say.
No,
it does not. It almost doesn't go well for Travis, because he takes care of all but one of them.
Yeah.
And then that guy gets taken out with a crossbow bolt or whatever. And then he sees the lady who shot it. And this is, again, I've read all this stuff, but I don't remember it. And I'm thinking, ah, another love interest for Machiste, perhaps.
That's what I was thinking, too, at this point.
And it might have worked out if she'd survived the issue. Spoiler.
Yeah.
She does not speak much, at least at this point. I forget if she does a little later. It's funny. She reminds me a little of Onyx, which was a character introduced briefly in the 80s. And I want to say the Green Arrow backup in Detective Comics.
Oh, okay. All right.
Basically another, you know, skilled fighter and stuff. Onyx wore a bit more than this lady here.
Yeah.
But, you know. They're very skimpy with the attire in Skartaris.
Which I do appreciate, but...
Not complaining.
Yeah, what was funny, though, like, I was the same thing. I was thinking, here's a new side main character. This is going to be a new member of the band, you know, that's going to be reappearing. And I was so surprised with what happened in this issue. I did not expect it.
I wasn't in so much as we've had another story or two that fits this basic trajectory.
That's true.
Bring in character, and it... Not all is what it seems to be, and character does not stick around. But it wouldn't have taken too much of a change to this story for her to have been another traveling companion.
Exactly. Yeah. Because then you could have made the band a little bit bigger, maybe some more intrigue, but maybe that's a lot more work for him, you know, having to draw 5 characters instead of 4. I don't know.
I wouldn't have had to draw necessarily all 5, just rotate them in and out.
Exactly.
It would have required a substantial change in the plot as to why are these centurions or whatever basically grabbing her and taking her into the tower.
Yeah, there's so many things they could have done. They could have had it been Machiste's sister, you know, or something like that. You know, there's all kinds of plot threads, but we're going to go in a different direction. But yeah, you had the Centurions grab her, and I love the Centurions. And Conan Comics, these would have been the Acolonians.
Ah. Once again, she's locked inside the tower. We must go in.
You have another tower.
Another tower. He's got the lockpick, otherwise known as the 44 Magnum. And then go climb the stairs, get past the obstacles. This time it's a large serpent or whatever.
Yep, snake.
It was funny, as I was starting to do my notes as I was reading this, I hit page 10, we get the serpent, and I'm starting to write, you know, type in, oh, and Travis quickly defeats the serpent. And then I go another page, I go back, backspace. You know, did not quickly defeat the serpent, but he kills him.
He did defeat the serpent. It took a while.
Yeah, a couple of pages. And then we get to this one point where it's a platform game. He's jumping from platform to platform.
That was cool. And I'll tell you what, they made him very strong in this platform game because he jumps and grabs that platform with his fingers.
Yeah.
And that looks smooth. And I can do a pull-up, but I could not do it by the tips of my finger on a smooth surface with one arm.
Okay. He's got his left arm on there.
Yep.
And he's pulled up. On the next panel, he has basically used his right arm to hang onto the edge of the thing and throws his left arm further out.
Yeah.
How did that work with the sword?
I have no clue. I would have been dead. I think any normal mortal would be dead at this point, but we roll with it. It's comics.
Yeah. Again, he's in pretty good shape and doesn't even bruise from any of this.
A scrape.
Yeah. Nothing. But he catches up. He goes through the doorway at the end because there's always a doorway at the end. encounters this giant wolf creature and, of course, gets attacked. Another fight breaks out. Go figure. And
the bolt
ends up using the bolt he'd gotten from the girl to stab the thing and kill it. At which point, oh, it's the girl. She's a werewolf.
And she's dead.
Yeah, she's dead. And we get the all that and more. She was also my daughter. And it's the old guy from the beginning. And we get the kind of the butler did it scene of, oh, forgive the deception. I recognize you as the warlord. Only you could save my daughter from her curse. Thank you.
Well, that was such a weird twist, wasn't it? Thank you for killing my daughter. I was like, all right.
Well, it goes right, back cool. to the nothing is what it seems to be.
Exactly. It was kind of cool. I didn't expect that twist there.
And we don't know much about this guy who was claiming to do the palm reading and stuff, but he seems to teleport Travis out of the tower.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. So he has some kind of, I don't know, magical power of some sorts, because that was very cool.
Yeah. So it was good fun, done in one kind of adventure. If you had not been reading the book up until now, this was a decent jumping on point. I say yeah. Decent because, I mean, half the characters aren't in the book, but if you like this, you'd I think, get a feel for the style of storytelling and whatnot.
Yeah. I thought it was a really cool, it makes you realize why you were able to pick up an issue 263 and just start reading from there.
Yeah.
When comics were written like this.
Yeah.
This is like issue 22 and you pick it up and you could have missed the first 21 and been okay.
Yeah, because the only thing you need to accept is that the warlord is the protagonist of the book.
Yeah, that's it. And here's these cool characters that are his friends that you didn't even see in this issue, but you'll get them later on.
Well, again, you don't even need to know about them here. It's just we're following this guy. He's an adventurer.
Yeah, done in one, and I would have been hooked on this one comic. I'd have been like, wow, this one's like Conan. Cool.
Yeah, yeah. And then we get to issue 23. Travis is continuing to travel. He's, I guess, either bathing or swimming or whatever. Hears some voices and encounters these golden children of the future, he calls them.
Yeah, they're so innocent, pure. There was something that gave it away in here, but yes.
And then they get attacked by these green, looks like Neanderthals almost.
Yeah, like Hulk-like Neanderthals just going after them, ready to, you know, take them away and eat them. Who knows?
So, of course, Travis literally leaps in and starts fighting them.
Yep, takes them out with their own weapons, because he doesn't have his sword at this point, and just boom, 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 killing everyone.
Yeah, and of course, these I don't know, teenagers, whatever, they're just watching and doing nothing.
And wouldn't you be shocked? You would think they'd want to help, because he's defending you, that you'd want to at least help this guy out, but no, they just watch.
And that's why when the fight's over and Travis is getting out after having drowned one of these guys, it's like, what kind of people are you?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, you stand around like sheep being slaughtered. They don't do anything. I remember that was one of the things he said in there. They literally did nothing, just waited for it to happen.
Well, in that page there, when he's got that quote, they take him to the gazebo or whatever so they can tend to his wounds. This felt like a bit of a Star Trek kind of a, and welcome to our planet.
Yeah, it totally felt like that.
And they are the children of Baal. And I don't know what that means or whatever, but, you know, they're all equals. And he's like, oh, you're getting attacked by these guys. You've got to learn to fight back, and I'll teach you how to do it.
Yeah, nothing.
And then it's like, but we're going to take the fight to them. And the Orms, I guess, are the people who had attacked. Their city lies under the surface, and there's this, I guess, access pipe or something with, you know, a ladder built into it.
It looks like an access pipe, almost like a sewer pipe headed down.
Yeah, yeah.
Some kind of drainage. Who knows what that is?
And they get in there, and Travis is just starting to take out the guys one by one as they get in there.
And that's where we get the dead giveaway with that chick with the spear.
Yeah, suddenly she's picked up one of their spears and starts skewering one of the guys. And he's like, oh, you learn fast for a pacifist.
Yeah, for a pacifist. She throws it and spears the guy perfectly in the back. You're like, yeah, that's not a skill you just pick up like that just by watching. All right, what's going on here?
Well, and there's this, I guess, little artificial sun they're using to get light inside this cavern and whatnot. And he's like, oh, well, we can take him out by turning out the lights. Let's destroy that sun thing. Finds the control center and decides to shoot it. All of this inside of a page.
Yeah, finds the control center, shoots it, boom, that's it. From growing and creeping around, all one page, boom, boom, boom.
And it's like, oh, hit something important. Let's get the hell out of here. And of course, they're getting attacked as they're running out. He's shooting. They run. And it seems like there was a potentially a big boom out there, but I don't know. But they get out and it's like, oh, that should save you until they get their son repaired. You know, you'll have time to build weapons, get a defense going, etc. They're climbing out, and I was going to say I'm not entirely sure what happened, but I guess he got hit from behind?
Yeah, they show a club. He gets clubbed in the head.
Actually,
and when he comes...
not from behind. I guess it's from in front.
Yeah, like as he's climbing out of the pipe, somebody on the upper side, it looks like, whacks him.
I think it was her.
Yeah, I think so too, because she came out first.
The stick is only extending into the panel a little bit there on the right, so I'd missed it the first time.
So she whacked him. Not only is she throwing spears, she's whacking Travis over the head.
And then we get this splash page. He's tied to the post. They're dancing, and it looks like they're ready to light the fire under him.
Yeah. I was like, what is going on here? This is where it flipped. I thought it was weird when she knew how to fight. I'm like, okay, something's awry here. But yeah, when you see the big cauldrons and people hanging and he's tied up, I'm like, what are we doing?
And it's like, we're going to sacrifice you to the great god Baal. It's like, yeah, I'll pass. It's like, sorry, can't. And then he sees what's in the cauldron, and it was one of those green guys.
And Neanderthals are being cooked.
And at this point, he realizes he backed the wrong horse.
Yes.
Unfortunately, at this point, the green guys come in, pretty much massacre the children of Baal, and are starting to move on Travis. It's like, you're the one who raided our city. And he's like, yeah, let me explain. Oh, yeah, don't worry. We get it. You were played. It was fun watching your reaction when you thought you were going to get cooked.
That was funny. I was like, oh my god, these guys are good sports.
That spawned on a dime there, though.
It really did. I felt like, wow, I twist and turn. It's almost too abrupt.
I was a little disappointed with how it ended, of them saying, you know, just stay away or next time you'll end up in our stew pot. Because I don't know that we ever see these guys again, and it'd be kind of cool to.
I think it's a missed opportunity for like a future, we saved you, and maybe he helps them out in the future, and maybe there's some type of people he can rely on in a future plot thread or a future story. But that's unfortunate if we don't see him again, because I thought they were kind of a cool group.
I don't recall them again, let me put it that way.
Yeah, who knows?
I would do a story about a year or two further in from this, where Travis is having to help some, you know, village or whatever, of the big thugs are attacking, oh, woe is us, or whatever. He goes, explores, realizes it's them, is about to flip, thinking, well, what did this village do, or whatever, and realizes, no, this time they are in the wrong, you know?
Exactly. Hey, remember how you let me go? You really shouldn't have, because now I'm going to take you out.
Hey, this was a time-tested tale of don't judge a book by its cover.
It really was. And I'll tell you what, this was a lot of fun, because I felt like most of these issues, or all of these issues, were kind of like a done-in-one adventure, even though there's stuff that spills over from story to story.
20 and 21 definitely, I think, were more of a two-parter, but
yeah,
even so, it feels like we get little mini-adventure, 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 mini-adventure. There's a thread between them.
Yeah.
But it's not the never-ending saga or the disconnected arcs.
Exactly. This is so enjoyable to me. I'm really waiting, and I really think they're going to come out with some kind of deluxe hardcover type collection for this.
Yeah.
Especially now that it's out on the DC app and everything. They're just digitizing it, you know, remastering it and all. It just makes me so happy, because this is something that I will go back and read again, because I've enjoyed it that much.
If they don't do an omnibus or three on this, I'd be shocked and disappointed.
Me too. And it's well deserved. It's Mike Grella, honestly, some of his best stuff. I know he's known for Green Arrow and Warlord and several other things, but I think this represents him very well.
Yeah, yeah. He's had a number of things that were very well done, but I think Warlord and Green Arrow are probably what he's best known for. He had a good run on Legion and a few other things here and there. But particularly here, where he's in control and calling all the shots, story-wise, art-wise, and stuff, there weren't too many guys doing that back at this era, as I recall.
Yeah. I mean, even today, we don't have many people who do that. There's a few here and there, sprinkling, a smattering, but they're few and far between. It's a lot of work, but, you know, it's almost kind of freeing a little bit if you can do it, not being dependent on someone else.
Yeah, yeah.
And having your vision fully realized with what you want. I think there's something freeing about that to a real creative type. And I was just looking him up. Yeah, Mike Grell, he's still with us. I was making sure he didn't pass or anything. He's still doing his thing. I don't know if he's probably retired. Probably just goes to cons and signs stuff.
He goes to cons, signs stuff. I don't know if he's currently working on much of anything.
Yeah.
But again, he's got such a nice body of work that I hope if he's retired, he's enjoying it. And if he's not, he's enjoying whatever he's doing. I mean,
yeah. Anyone who did books in the 70s, I always look him up before I'm asking about him just to make sure. I'm like, man, yeah, he's 76. So I like to always check because I don't want to be talking about, I wonder what he's doing now. Oh, he died 5 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
That stinks.
Well, again, particularly creators in the 70s, they're at about that age where it's, you know, even odds, if not better, that they're no longer with us, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, but I'll tell you what, if people have not read Warlord, they need to pay for the DC app. They need to read it because right now there are no collections unless you want to go dig up single issues, which is fun.
Mm-hmm.
And this stuff isn't overly ridiculously expensive unless you're getting like a first issue in pristine condition.
I have not checked what the prices were, but when I went and got some of these ages ago, they were not expensive at all.
Yeah, they were kind of like, man, I hate to say it, but like a lot of comic shops treated them like fodder back in the day.
I think that while there's a following for both Warlord and Grell, this isn't one of those uber hot items that everybody is clamoring for. It's more of a hidden gem.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're at a convention, like particularly like Heroes Con, I would imagine, go through the back issue bins. That'd probably be a good place to find this kind of stuff. It's out there to be had because, I mean, there was a decent print run on these things. And again, not everybody is clamoring for it, despite what a great read it is.
Yeah.
But if you've got the time, you know, to read it, and there's 133 issues, what, 6, 7 annuals and stuff like that for this run, not all of which is Grell, but still, you could read that in fairly short order if you got the DC app easily inside of a month if you put your mind to it.
Oh, yeah. Another thing that I really love about this comic, it kind of reminds me of, like, you know, Yellowstone, that TV series became really popular because they decided, hey, let's make the guys this macho tough, you know, again, because it wasn't in vogue for a while.
Oh, he's Travis is the man's man kind of thing.
Exactly. I love that. He's like a meat and potatoes guy. And, you know, like he's just the alpha male type. And I just love that every now and then, just reading without trappings of the deconstructed character and the emotions. It's nice having this. It's refreshing.
There's an aspect of he's that action movie hero kind of a guy. Yeah.
Yeah, I just love it. It's just kind of fun. It takes me back to my youth when this is kind of what was given to you as like the ideal for here's a tough guy. And I was like, yeah, like Schwarzenegger or whatever.
Well, and what's interesting with these four issues in particular is the first two were kind of the end of a major arc and stuff like that with what's going on with Joshua and all of that stuff. And now we're almost kind of sort of not, I don't want to say in a limbo kind of a thing. But doing a series of done-in-one adventures, we haven't really started on the next major thrust of whatever the story is going to do next. And I like that because it's not like, oh, here's just a filler issue or anything. All the issues are done-in-one to a degree. And this is just him alone. We'll get back to the rest of the gang at some point.
Exactly. And there's so much that happens from page to page. If you were spending 40 cents, you got your money's worth back in the day.
Yeah.
And yeah, this has been the perfect thing for us to read. I love it. Every time we do it, I love it.
Well, again, 40 cents, 17 pages, so not that big of a time investment. You get a done-in-one story, solid payoff, a good twist, entertaining. It's not light on art or dialogue. You get also, usually, the two-page splash for the title, a good one-page splash somewhere in the issue. So it's checking off all the boxes there compared to a modern comic that is 10 times the price and a fraction of a story.
Yeah. You get the first two or three pages, that's an issue. You're like, oh, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait a month and read the next three pages. Unfortunately, that's what we get doled out to us.
I'm enjoying it. I honestly don't remember what happens next, where this goes and stuff. I'm curious how many more done-in-ones we get before we start getting down a little more on a particular narrative thread of some direction.
Cool. Well, I'm glad it's going to be new for you because it's all new for me. So we'll enjoy it together.
Sounds good. Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next preview spotlight.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.